like to share with you a little bit of the information and kind of an update on where we're at with using leaf water potentials for irrigation scheduling guidelines in California. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the basic principles of how we use that information and discuss some of the long-term irrigation work that we're doing primarily at the Westside Research and Extension Center, but also in grower sites, grower fields, and a variety of soil types, and then talk about an approach that we might use to look at a cumulative water stress value for evaluating treatment differences. So by way of background, water stress evaluation and indexing is in cotton has been met with a considerable success, I think we can say. Stress indexing has been developed using both temperature stress indexing, like methods with the infrared thermometry, and more recently from thermal bands of the spectrum through remote sensing, various types of remote sensing approaches. And we also have, and some of those temperature stress indexes also use in combination measurements of leaf water potential. And measuring cotton's leaf water potential has been done fairly regularly, particularly in the West since the 1980s. And with some of that first work being done by Scholender in the mid-1960s. There are some drawbacks to the some of our infrared thermometry and remote sensing. That does require a considerable sample size, typically, for good results. The time that it takes to collect some of that information and the availability of when you can collect that data, and then the processing and interpretation time. So. We use it as a fairly practical tool, but also as a research-oriented tool for our measurements in looking at water stress in California. They're relatively quick. The pressure chamber's relatively quick. It's sensitive in the range that we're interested in, and it requires small sample sizes that provide a direct plant-based measurement. So why do we want to, that's a little bit on why we want to monitor crop water stress. It is a tool for irrigation management, and it does link some of our, and allow us to, within the season, to look at some of our plant growth goals and link some of our crop production with crop, and regulate crop vigor during the season. So, the statement here is that we can establish and accurately quantify intensity and duration of plant water stress, but I use that as a question mark because that's what I'd like to talk about a little bit today. Can we, in fact, use both intensity and duration of those leaf water potential readings specifically to come up with a relationship between that and crop performance? And so, just to give you a little bit of an idea of how we look at diurnal patterns or how the response is in the field, you generally find that leaf water potential is going to increase as our ET rates decrease. And what I mean by that is that early in the morning, there's very low evaporative demand. Generally, there's a rebound in soil moisture availability. Migration overnight and so early in the morning, about a five to seven bar reading or so is what you're going to find typically in cotton early morning after in a well-watered situation. And then by the time you get to midday, that leaf water potential generally finds a maximum point and then sort of holds there for that particular day. And as soil water availability declines, leaf water potential decreases. And this is what a pattern might look like in a sandy loam soil in California right after an irrigation. So you see down on the x-axis there the days after an irrigation, and you can see it does follow a fairly linear pattern, and that's the case for most soils and situations that we're going to find. Certainly, there is some climatic issues and some variation there that can occur, But typically, if we have fairly constant weather, you're not going to see that. There's also some variations that we see in the soil physical parameters that can have a big influence on the rate of decline. And part of that has to do with the availability of the roots to tap into moisture. But it also, in this case, we can see that there's some very, very large differences, or can be very large differences, in how our root systems and structures develop depending upon the soil type. And I'm just illustrating here with three different soil types. We have a range of soils, alluvial soils in California, everything from fairly high, heavy clays in that upper situation into some of the sandy soils in that middle or brown line, and then our clay loam soils. We tend to get very deep rooting and high moisture availability following an irrigation event. And so, as you might expect, we've got some pretty we can see some pretty large differences in the difference in how leaf water or how plant water stress accumulates over time. So a little bit about some of our long-term studies here. We're trying to develop information on irrigation water requirements and also the impacts caused by excessive and deficit water applications. Certainly, deficit irrigation is becoming more of an option and an approach as we have limited water availability and very high water costs. And so we've been developing a number of studies aimed at evaluating this. I'm looking at just some of the data. A little bit of data I'll share with you today is on the 1996 to 2006 season. Irrigation treatments had a number, about four different irrigation regimes. They're replicated. We monitored midday leaf water potentials, replicated those plots with five plants per plot, and all those measurements were conducted in the afternoon. And if we look over the long haul at a number of years, we pulled some of the data. You do see somewhat not a drastic correlation between yield over a number of years and cumulative leaf water potential. What I did here was take some of the weekly readings that we made during the production season and basically accumulated those values and used used 10 bars as sort of a baseline for those measurements. And this is just another graphic looking at some of the Pima trials that we've had side by side with our Acala cotton types in a very similar type of relationship. But should we expect a very close relationship from year to year between crop stress intensity and duration? And I think the answer is it's going to be very limited because we've got a very different yield potentials from year to year. Even though we might have the same location, we might have the same soil types available, we're going to certainly have variations in yield as a result of climate, pests, and certainly agronomic interactions with nutrients and whatnot. So the thing that we're trying to do is sort of recognize that there are going to be annual variations in yield at these individual sites, and we want to incorporate our knowledge of site-to-site variation so in this improving our model of crop water stress accumulation. So we used a computational method looking at some of that data, and we did some periodic monitoring of leaf water potential, weekly measurements of leaf water potential. We assumed that where we didn't have individual days, we assumed a linear rate of leaf water potential decline or in some cases an increase where we had irrigation events. We assigned daily values to each day, and we interpolated again during irrigation events. We used that an unstressed baseline of minus 10 bars. We sum those values during what we call were labeled as a critical stress period, and we identified that just prior a period prior to bloom and about 14 days post cutout. So we accumulated basically looked at those daily values of leaf water potential, summed them up, and this is what we came up with some of the earlier data. We did have, I think, very, very consistent results and good-fitting relationships between, again, midday leaf water potential, the accumulation of that, and yield. And And I'm going to show you some more data here. It's kind of interesting. We didn't always see the same shape of the curve, but we had the same general result in which there was very close correlations between the two. So I'm not going to we do have some more data along those similar lines, but basically I think it does confirm that the pressure chamber is an effective plant-based measurement. It integrates the atmospheric demand with plant and soil water status into a single measurement. Even with identical fields that start the season with a full soil moisture profile, yield responses to crop water stress do vary from year to year. However, relative responses to crop water deficits using a cumulative stress index is reasonably predictable. And we generally found that as long as you don't increase beyond about 1,300 and 1,500 stress bar days, you're in pretty safe shape in terms of maintaining optimum yield. I think the stress bar day concept could be used in agricultural systems to improve our irrigation scheduling, but also especially when deficit irrigation approaches are needed. And we'd like to continue this work and look a little bit further. We've got still quite a number of data sets that we haven't evaluated over the past few years. We'll be working on that. We'd like to try to understand a little bit better what affects the slope, or why some of the slopes are not equal even when we have consistent varieties. I don't think we quite understand that just yet. And then how do commercial cultivars differ in their response to water deficits? I think this kind of information has applications that can assist us in improving our irrigation scheduling methods. But also there is new interest in evaluating plant materials that have new cultivars that might have better drought tolerance, and we think this might be a method that could be used for that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. We still have time for questions, if you've got any. Craig?
The question is, how many samples do we take to get to evaluate this? In our case, we measured leaf water potential only once a week. Then we made those interpretations, but we made them on five plants, and we actually in a number of trials we did more than two plots out of a four. Most of these were four replicates, but we pulled the two plots out of because we had that for all of the data. We pulled that information for this. So, but usually you can get a very good reading when you go into a field midday leaf water potential. You're not going to get much more of a variation than about one minus about a bar. In about three to four measurements, we've taken five just to confirm that. So it can be done fairly crappily.
Within the single ponds, if you remember,
generally, I missed that part. We're taking the first fully expanded leaf. We call it node five, down from the top, and we're selecting that as a basis. Yeah, we don't have. I mean, that's a really good question. What kind of a response can we expect? I think based on the fact that we do have a fairly linear response, I might expect that we could get some similar. We do not have all of those data that you saw, looking at the accumulated values. Those were all from one soil type. So. Yeah, the question is about normalization, and if I understand what you're getting at there, normalization. Normalization with respect to what? I guess I'll ask you that.
Well, yep. You
correct.
And I'll
right. Well, basically, remember I showed you those linear relationships between as time progresses, it's a fairly leaf water potential also changes in a fairly linear manner. It was basically a linear function that we used. We did. Yeah. I think normalization from year to year is going to be difficult because it could be a pest management issue, it could be heat stress. There are some other things in there that I think we're not going to be able to factor in. What I'm proposing is that this could be a very good method for evaluating crop responses in a side-by-side type of situation when you're in a similar area with similar soil types. And that might be how we evaluate varieties and how well they handle stress.